always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Daria Albinger. A chilly London rain couldn't dampen the spirits of the crowds from around the world who wanted to be a part of history.
The hymns and the songs, everything, it was fabulous. It was just absolutely fabulous. Couldn't ask for anything better.
Julie Newman traveled from Canada for today's coronation of King Charles III and Queen Camilla. A Chicago police officer shot and killed in the line of duty on the city's south side early today. Mayor Lori Lightfoot.
I've directed the superintendent to spare no expense, to make sure that we find the people responsible for this and bring them to justice.
CPD says a fellow officer responding to reports of gunfire found his colleague at the scene and took her to the hospital where she died. The favorite going into today's Kentucky Derby has been scratched. Forte had a foot injury. The White House says President Biden will give the commencement address at Howard University and the Air Force Academy. This is ABC News. A baseball announcer apologizing for seemingly slipping up on the air.
Oakland Athletics TV announcer Glenn Kuiper using a racial slur on air during a pregame segment before last night's game at Kansas City. During that telecast on NBC Sports California, Kuiper later apologizing, saying his remark, quote, didn't come out quite the way I wanted it to, unquote. An A statement calling Kuiper's language unacceptable. Kuiper is in his 20th year as an A's play-by-play voice. Joey Waller, ABC News.
About a week after the New York City Transit Authority announced it would stop publishing commuter alerts to Twitter, the notices are back on the platform. Transit officials announced that they'd stop publishing the alerts when Twitter said it would have to start charging for some of the services required to provide them. Well, then in an about-face, Twitter said it would restore free access to government services. So the notices are back. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
He's the grave digger, Gilbert Brown.
Where can you go where it's always a standard room only? You ain't gonna find that in Chicago.
It's never personal, only politics.
You ain't gonna find that in Minnesota, standing room only, because you can go to the gumball machine, stick a quarter in there, I'll come pick it.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
That's the way it is, man. We love football, fans love us.
Weekdays 4 to 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
ABC News, I'm Daria Albinger. A chilly London rain couldn't dampen the spirits of the crowds from around the world who wanted to be a part of history.
The hymns and the songs, everything, it was...
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. President Biden wants to raise taxes on Americans earning more than $400,000 a year. The rate would go from the current 3.8% to 5%. The new revenue would be used to shore up Medicare. Some of the biggest supporters of the bill are those who would get taxed the most. More from Eric Gladys.
Morris Pearl with the group Patriotic Millionaire says there's more than enough money to fund Medicare. He argues the wealthiest Americans, especially those living off of their investments, can and should be paying more.
We can ask the financially challenged people who need Medicare to sacrifice more by having less medical care, or we can ask the ultra-rich to sacrifice more by being a little bit less ultra-rich.
Biden's proposal would keep Medicare solvent for at least the next 25 years, according to estimates by the Medicare Office of the Chief Actuary. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell has promised it will not advance in Congress. Critics say raising taxes would hurt the economy. They argue that people would spend less if their earnings drop. Pearl agrees that the economy depends on consumer spending and says working Americans who spend most of what they bring home should be allowed to keep more of their money.
The very rich people are not going to spend more money. They'll just become a little bit richer.
More than 65 million people across the U.S. depend on Medicare coverage, but the fund's trustees warn that cuts to benefits will be necessary by 2028 without increased revenues. Pearl notes that the nation's economy was strong under the Republican Eisenhower administration, when the wealthiest Americans paid tax rates up to 90% on their second, third, and fourth millions.
And there's no reason why people who make a lot of money now should be paying not the same tax rate as people who work for a living, but actually lower tax rates. We need to change the system.
This is Eric Galatis reporting.
And you're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
He's the grave digger, Gilbert Brown.
Where can you go where it's always a standing room only? You ain't gonna find that in Chicago.
It's never personal, only politics.
You ain't gonna find that in Minnesota, standing room only, because you can go to the gumball machine, stick a quarter in there, out come tickets.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
That's the way it is, man. We love football fans. Fans love us.
Weekdays 4 to 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning and welcome to our Saturday morning program. Thank you for joining me and my always wonderful and efficient and productive producer. Her name is Anya. We're coming to you from the studios this morning of WAUK in downtown Waukesha, but broadcasting throughout the state of Wisconsin on the regional areas of Civic Media. Glad to have you with us. Delighted to have you spending some time with me and Anya this morning as we talk on Morning Cannolis about the significant stories in news, in government, in law, and the aspiration for justice in America. This is Morning Cannolis. It is our weekly review, our analysis, and our discussion of those major issues. And this morning is no exception. Although this morning we also have some special features of our program. Today, as you know, is also Coronation Day. It is Coronation Day in the United Kingdom. We're not going to be talking at all about that this morning because we have so many other things to address. It's also Kentucky Derby Day at Churchill Downs. Likewise, an important day in the history of our nation. We've got a special event coming up during the course of our first hour here. We'll be giving away some Brewers tickets for Monday evening's game against the Dodgers. So stay tuned for that as well. Once again, Morning Cannolis, our discussion this morning, as every Saturday morning, about those major stories in government, in law, and the aspiration for justice in America. We'll also be taking your phone calls, as always. That number is 844-967-2789. Once again, 844-967-2789. Morning Cannolis with you this morning. And this morning, as my friend and colleague indicated in his show, now concluded this morning, we also have real cannolis in the studios this morning. If sometime you drop by, we can share those with you as well. As always, our agenda this morning is ambitious, but I believe achievable. It is also hopefully educational and inspiring. And we always ask three significant questions. What happened? What happened in these areas of law and government and justice during the course of the week? What do we know? What do we know for certain about what happened during the course of the week? What are the facts known to us all? Second, why are those things important? Why are they relevant? What's material about the things presented to us in the course of our broadcast and in other broadcasts here on this Civic Media station? And then what do we do about it? What actions should we take? What are the appropriate responses or reactions? What answers should we give to those things that we learn about? This morning, no exception to that agenda. Lots and lots of things to cover, including, yes, that's right, we're going to return to lots of news in the area of January 6th, some convictions of people involved in that event. a rioter in particular sentenced to one of the most dramatic sentences imposed by a federal district court judge. We're going to talk about Fani Willis in Georgia and the impact of some false electors there and their status. We're going to chat as well about the E. Jean Carroll testimony, the trial now heading toward a verdict decision next week, that happening in a federal court in Manhattan. And I'm going to turn again to the Supreme Court of the United States of America, a significant decision in the area of the death penalty imposed just this past week, which we chatted a lot about last week. I'm going to talk, yes, necessarily about ethics once again, more information coming about our justices and things that they should and should not have been doing when it comes to accepting gifts, monetary gifts, other things that raise issues about their ethical core and the things that they should be focused on as they give us what should be impartial and unaffected rulings in major issues. We're doing all that in anticipation coming up in June, just a few short weeks, a review of the upcoming cases in many, many areas. And that will be happening again, beginning in our 50th show in early June, talking about the major rulings coming up in the wake of this term of the Supreme Court. I promised last week we would also chat about Ron DeSantis and Disney and the continuing sparring there. We're going to talk about what that means today, why that's important, what you should know about that, and frankly, what you can even do about that. And then, of course, we've got some other issues related to law and government and justice in America. And we begin this morning not with our traditional segment on what happened today in history, but instead another story in our continuing segment that I'm calling Undiscovered Justice in America. We've done this a few times in the past. Cases, stories, events that have sort of flown under the radar, not in the traditional above-the-fold headlines in America's newspapers. And this is one instance where justice delivered by a jury. This one in Manhattan, a federal district court jury assembled for recent weeks to hear about copyright infringement, intellectual property, and yes, indeed, the intersection of music, popular music, the intersection of that with law and justice and jury determinations and intellectual property. What is this all about? Well, we know from just this past week, a major verdict coming out of a federal district court in New York involving Ed Sheeran, the very popular British singer and songwriter Ed Sheeran. After 3 hours of deliberation, jurors in this particular case pending in the federal district court in Manhattan in Ed Sheeran's copyright infringement trial have unanimously found, civil case, but unanimously found that Ed Sheeran did not in fact copy Marvin Gaye's 1973 song, you all know it well, called Let's Get It On. A jury finding that there was no intellectual property stolen by virtue of Ed Sheeran and a co-writer of his, authoring and singing and putting out there for all of our consumption, his 2014 track called Thinking Out Loud. And again, the basis for this lawsuit was just this. The heirs of Gaye's co-writer on his hit, named Ed Townsend, had alleged in this lawsuit of a couple of years ago, filed in the federal district court there, that Sheeran's song, which was co-written by, again, his partner named Amy Wadge, W-A-D-G-E, had what they described as overt common elements, and also striking similarities to the classic. In other words, did he steal components, the intellectual components of the song written by and made popular by Marvin Gaye, Let's Get It On, in producing and permitting us all to be consumers of his 2014 song, Thinking Out Loud. Sheeran's team argued in court that any similarities are a pure coincidence. The two songs, Sheeran and his lawyers had said, they share versions of a similar and unprotectable chord progression. Things that I know very little about, but I suspect those of you who are well-versed in music know about that. He says that was freely available to all songwriters. And the British hitmaker, Ed Sheeran, testified during the course of this trial, the first week of the trial, that most pop songs can fit over most other pop songs. And that squares with what he has said before. Specifically, he said, there's only so many notes and very few chords used in pop music. Again, that's Sheeran's testimony during the course of this trial. And he actually performed a mashup of those two songs in the course of the proceedings. He's done that also during his recent concerts. And he did it again in the courtroom. The judge permitted him to do that. He pulled out his guitar to demonstrate his songwriting process for his lawyer and for the jury and for everybody else who's watching. He even sang a part of his hit that's under fire here in the part of the lawsuit against him. He also said that he hadn't heard Gaye's song before he actually authored his song. Significantly, he indicated outside of the jury that he had actually missed his grandmother's funeral back in Ireland to be in the courtroom to defend against these claims by Marvin Gaye's successors. According to the Daily Mail, his father, John, told people that Sheeran was very upset, could not be there, but he had to be thousands of miles away in court defending his integrity. Now, significantly, Sheeran had previously been accused of copyright infringement in other cases. Again, we always focus on the facts in the particular case, so nothing to indicate that just because he's previously allegedly done this means that he's done it in this instance. That's the law in America. Those are basic evidentiary concepts. In April of 2022, for example, he won a similar lawsuit in the UK over his 2000 song called Shape of You. And there was a musician at that time named Sammy Switch who had alleged that it was too close to his 2015 song called Oh Why. So same kind of allegations that against Sheeran, that he had taken intellectual property components of the one song and incorporated those into his song. He also settled a 2016 lawsuit that had accused him of having copied the 2014 song Photograph from Matt Kirtle's tune Amazing. So he's been down this road before, but once again, just because there are previous allegations does not mean that in a particular lawsuit, this one now pending, that he did exactly what allegedly he did in those other cases. Again, one of them also finding expressly that he had not infringed the copyright. He said this a long way. He says, I feel like claims like this are way too common now, and to become a culture where a claim is made with the idea that a settlement would be cheaper than going ahead with the actual production and the pursuit of the lawsuit itself. I just think it comes with the territory, Sheeran said. When they say there's a hit, there's a writ. It's true. He says every single hit. He goes on to explain his testimony in court. Fascinating stuff, legal stuff, but also musical stuff. He said there's four chords that get used in pop songs, and there's however many notes, eight notes or whatever, and there's 60,000 songs released every single day. And if you just mathematically think about that, the likelihood of this song having the same chords as another song is fairly, fairly high. Expressed frustration during his testimony in this most recent case, proclaiming that if he lost, he would make a major life change. He had said, if that happens, if he gets a bad verdict from the jury, I'm done, he said. I'm stopping. I find it really insulting. I would work really hard to be where I am at. And all that, once again, prior to the return just this past week by this jury, finding that his song, this 2014 song, Thinking Out Loud, did not in fact violate any copyright, any intellectual property interest in Marvin Gaye's 1973 song, Let's Get It On. Now, why is this undiscovered justice? Well, it's certainly not undiscovered for the people involved in this case. It is out there. But we know that intellectual property as a part of the justice delivered to America is a big deal. And it comes up all the time in federal cases in particular. Two cases pending right now in front of the Supreme Court involving Andy Warhol in a picture of Prince, involving Jack Daniels in a toy bottle. Those we're going to be talking about down the road as well. Think about intellectual property. Think about all of that. Ed Sheeran victorious this past week. We'll talk more about other cases in the news after this first break here on Morning Cannolis. Stay with us for that discussion.
Feeling dead. anxious, depressed? You are not alone. According to the World Health Organization, approximately 200...
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
He's the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown.
Where can you go where it's always a standard room only? You ain't gonna find that in Chicago.
It's never personal, only politics.
You ain't gonna find that in Minnesota, standing room only, because you can go to the gumball machine, stick a quarter in there, out come ticket.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
That's the way it is, man. We love football fans. Fans love us.
Weekdays 4 to 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Here's your updated forecast. Scattered thunderstorms likely tonight, otherwise overcast skies. Lows around 51, east winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Chance for isolated thunderstorms again tomorrow, 66. Cloudy, overcast tomorrow night. Chance for scattered storms. Lows dip down to about 49. Chance for scattered storms Monday with highs in the upper 50s. Chance for scattered showers and highs in the low 60s on Tuesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 56.
540 AM, Wisconsin's home for Rational Talk Radio.
Maybe just the touch of a hand.
And welcome back. This is Morning Cannolis, and yes, that's Ed Sheeran in his song called Thinking Out Loud. Successful this past week's in convincing a jury that he had not, in fact, ripped off the intellectual property rights of Marvin Gaye's 1973 song, Let's Get It On. Significant in Undiscovered Justice. Again, not because it's undiscovered to him or others, but because it underscores this issue that is sometimes underneath the main headlines. The Supreme Court, as I said right before the break, taking up two major intellectual property cases, our highest court in the land, addressing what intellectual property rights mean in America in 2023 and beyond. One case, as we have talked before, involving Andy Warhol and his recreation of an image of Prince. A second one involving Jack Daniels and its infamous or famous bottle, and an attempt to produce a toy bottle based upon that Jack Daniels bottle, whether that also implicates intellectual property rights. Both of those pending right now before the United States Supreme Court. We'll talk more about those in June as the United States Supreme Court tells us once again what copyright is all about, what intellectual property rights mean in America in 2023 and beyond. This morning, again, lots and lots of news in the area of aspiration of justice and law and government in our nation. Let's begin by talking once again, as we have in the past, about January 6th, the insurrection, the riot of that day. To this time, about 1,000 people identified by the United States Department of Justice as defendants, many of them charged with misdemeanors for entering improperly our United States Capitol, many charged with felonies for their destructive behaviors and conduct in violation of basic norms, and attempts also to undermine and overthrow our government on that day, before, during, and even after January 6th. And so in that connection, a major, major jury verdict also returned this week, not in New York, but in the District of Columbia, the federal trial court there once again. Four members of the Proud Boys, this anti-American, this violent group that promotes the insurrectionist and seditious views that have been their hallmark. Proud Boys, including their now former leader named Enrique Tarrio, we've chatted about him in the past, were convicted just a couple of days ago of seditious conspiracy. What is seditious conspiracy? Basically, attempting to overthrow the government, sedition in quite its literal terms, attempting to undermine the very trappings of our republic, and doing that by virtue of the events of January 6th, attempting to overthrow the results of the Electoral College on that day, as we will know well, planning to keep President Donald Trump in power. Even after his election defeat by, of course, Joe Biden in November of the previous year. The jurors in that case, again, find Enrique Tarrio and four others also guilty of this crime of seditious conspiracy. But they failed to find a seditious conspiracy conviction in the case of one of the defendants named Dominic Pizzola. But he was convicted of other serious felonies, and that's significant. Again, some other defendants in that case, a fellow named other defendants, Ethan Nordine, Joseph Biggs, Zachary Real, all of them, along with Tarrio, all found guilty of sedition. One of these five found not guilty, or at least the jury did not return a verdict as to that count. Significant because what does that tell you? It tells you that the rule of law is in place. You've got a jury here who is not simply rubber stamping the recommendation, the petition, the application, the arguments by the U.S. Department of Justice to find everybody guilty of everything. They spent a lot of time, many, many days, parsing through all the evidence, and they came back and said, yes, as to four of these defendants, seditious conspiracy proven beyond a reasonable doubt. As to one of them, not quite as much. And sure enough, if you look at the testimony and the other evidence in support of a conviction of this Dominic Pizzola fellow, you'll find that he was not quite as much involved in the interactions, the communications back and forth with Tarrio and the others. And so the jury looked at that and said, you know what, just not enough in that case. I would offer to you that that is an affirmation of about our wonderful jury system in this country. You do have people taking that responsibility seriously, understanding fully that they have this tremendous duty to deliver justice by reaching a just and fair verdict. That's what they did. Also significant, of course, because you've got people who are brought in, who are dressed, who are impressed upon by the judge to review all the evidence based upon what they see in the courtroom. Significant because these are not members of a political party. They may have some political affiliations. This is not the Republicans, not the Democrats. These are not on-air pundits. It's not me. It may not even be you who's making these judgments about whether or not the evidence supports a story, an account, the event of seditious conspiracy. What this is, these are people who come in and look at evidence and say that, yes, indeed, these are people who attempted to overthrow our government. And so to the extent that there are members of our Congress, other people out there who continue to maintain that January 6th was not an insurrection, was not an attempt, a riotous attempt to overthrow our government, this verdict of just this past week, along with two other similar verdicts against the Oath Keepers, two other similar trials, all of that stands in strong affirmation of the notion that this was not simply a little visit by tourists coming into the Capitol, as some members of our legislature have advanced, but rather people looking at the evidence and saying, yes, indeed, there was an attempt on January 6th, before that, arguably after that as well, to overthrow our government. Not at all an insignificant jury verdict for these defendants, for America, and for all of us involved in that. The verdicts, again, coming after about 7 days of deliberation in that federal district court in Washington, were a major blow to this far-right group, as I indicated. The sedition charge, rarely used, harkens back to a union's efforts to protect the federal government against rebels during the Civil War. And all of that now, in the wake of this verdict coming out of Washington, D.C., significant in the continued prosecution of people involved in January 6th. When we come back, we're going to talk about this case even more, talk about some other folks also swept up in January 6th, and also talking about what happens, what's going on right now in Georgia with respect to false electors in America. Stay with us for that additional discussion, Rule of Law in America. Thinking about how people fall in love in mysterious ways.
A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM.
Always streaming at WAUK.
ABC News, I'm Daria Albinger. A chilly London rain couldn't dampen the spirits of the crowds from around the world who wanted to be a part of history.
The hymns and the songs, everything, it was fabulous. It was just absolutely fabulous. Couldn't ask for anything better.
Julie Newman traveled from Canada for today's coronation of King Charles III and Queen Camilla. A Chicago police officer shot and killed in the line of duty on the city's south side early today. Mayor Lori Lightfoot.
I've directed the superintendent to spare no expense, to make sure that we find the people responsible for this and bring them to justice.
CPD says a fellow officer responding to reports of gunfire found his colleague at the scene and took her to the hospital where she died. The favorite going into today's Kentucky Derby has been scratched. Forte had a foot injury. The White House says President Biden will give the commencement address at Howard University and the Air Force Academy. This is ABC News.
You're listening to a radio station that's part of the Civic Media Network. Find more at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Efforts to overhaul Wisconsin's shared revenue system appear to be headed for a veto. Governor Evers issued a video statement yesterday to say the bill doesn't send enough money to local communities and that it comes with too many strings attached.
That's why I can't support the Republican plan as is, and frankly, I'll veto it in its entirety.
Evers objects to conditions the bill puts on places like Milwaukee to get all the state money they can. Former Governor Scott Walker tells the Journal Sentinel Donald Trump should be at the first Republican presidential debate in Milwaukee in August. New York Times reports Trump is likely to skip at least one of the first two debates. In sports, the Bucks are in the market for a new head coach. They fired Mike Budenholzer yesterday. The Brewers are at San Francisco tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Moms, they really are the best. So this year, give her something really special. Write a special message for your mom, and we'll broadcast it right here on this station throughout the entire weekend of Mother's Day. Call 608-819-8255. 608-819-8255.
Larry, it's your mom. Did you know the Civic Media Network covers the whole state of Wisconsin? They can help your business get the word out, whether you want to reach a smidge of folks or just want the whole kit and caboodle. Call 608-819-8255. Okay then, bye.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app. The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
Site IUPATDC7.com.
We are back this morning, Morning Cannolis, Saturday, May 6th. Thank you once again for joining me for our discussion of law, government, and the aspiration for justice in America. We're talking this morning once again, as we have in the past, about January 6th, because this past week, three major news stories involving January 6th. Our first one, this major conviction of members of the Proud Boys for their involvement seditious conspiracy. Four of the five found guilty of that by a jury, beyond a reasonable doubt, unanimously. Donald Trump loomed large over all the proceedings. Again, this is about a three-month or so trial. Donald Trump, a major figure, even though, again, not a defendant in this case, not a witness, but nonetheless, his presence loomed large by virtue of the fact that the prosecution itself said repeatedly that the former president, a figure that the Proud Boys revered since his first days in the White House, was really at the heart of the story that they were telling during the course of this long trial. The prosecutors told the jury that these defendants and others in this group had refused to accept Joe Biden's election, and that, as the prosecutor said, acting as Donald Trump's army, they, the Proud Boys, organized and ultimately fought to keep their preferred leader in power, no matter what the law or the courts had to say about it. Again, that's from the closing arguments of the prosecutors to the jury. A prime example that the prosecutors used during the course of this prosecution was just this. The ties established came in December 2020, when Donald Trump posted a message on Twitter calling for what he described as a wild protest to be held in Washington, D.C. on January 6th. And again, evidence during the course of this trial and others that post was a call to action. And Enrique Tarrio, the now former leader of this group, and his lieutenants organized a group of so-called real men, as he described them, and described themselves as the Ministry of Self-Defense, to be on the ground that day in Washington. Private online chats, huge amounts of information provided in text, chat information. Tarrio had said that the group was meant to standardize event organizing, which sounds fairly benign, but also added a cryptic message. He said, Whispers, 1776. And prosecutors explained to the jury that that was a subtle way of suggesting that this so-called Ministry of Self-Defense was bent on revolution. And yes, that's sedition. And they called the group a violent gang that came together to use force against its enemies. Donald Trump, once again, even though he's not a party to this criminal prosecution, at least not this one, nonetheless looms large. Interestingly, during the course of this case, we get some testimony in addition to the government's principal witnesses. We also get testimony from two of the defendants who decided to take the stand and describe their own attempt to minimize their involvement in these allegations, say that all this was unplanned, it was not necessarily organized, was meant not to accomplish what happened on that day. The jury plainly dismissing all of that based upon the statements that they themselves made, refuted in their own communications with each other. And so their attempts to describe and limit their own involvement, almost certainly unsuccessful in front of this jury. Interestingly, prosecutors also called two cooperating witnesses, and their names were Jeremy Bertino and Matthew Green. Those folks were also charged in this case, and they took the stand and described, again, the internal workings, the attitude, the sort of atmosphere of the Proud Boys. In particular, this fellow named Jeremy Bertino testified on the stand that about things said to him. He said, I expected them to save the country by any means necessary, up to and including violence, Mr. Bertino said, again, acknowledging that his own involvement was wrong, that he saw the light of day eventually, even though on January 6th he was a part of this initiative, this attempt to overthrow the government. Nonetheless, coming forward again with Matthew Green and providing an awful lot of support, human support for the notion that inside the Proud Boys, there was this very concerted effort to overthrow our government, to undermine the results of the Electoral College on that day, and to keep Donald Trump in power. Significantly, as I mentioned before the break, all of this under this sedition charge goes back to the Union's efforts way back at the time of the Civil War to attack and to stop secessionists during the Civil War. We know as well that this is the third in a series of trials under that same charge. We know as well that the Oath Keepers previously were the focus of similar trials. The leader of that group, Stuart Rhodes, that organization's founder and leader, also convicted of sedition, and each of the defendants in those cases also found guilty of other serious felonies.
all of them coming up for sentencing. With respect to Enrique Tarrio and his convicted co-defendants, likewise going to be back in federal court fairly soon, a number of months down the road, facing a maximum of nearly 50 years in prison, long periods of time based upon these convictions just this past week for a seditious conspiracy, heralding, shouting on the rooftops that indeed this was an attempt on January 6th, not simply to enter the Capitol building to cause a little ruckus. This was an attempt, contrary to what many people have said, to undermine and overthrow our government. That's the large takeaway from this. And also the large takeaway, the involvement of Donald Trump and this notion advocated by the prosecution that he was at the core of this, encouraging the Proud Boys to come forward. He was their inspiration, as many of their texts and their communications also confirmed. Not good news, not good news for Donald Trump, as he continues to face himself the possibility of indictment by the federal government. We know Jack Smith, who is the special counsel, continuing to convene proceedings of a federal grand jury, also there in the federal courthouse in Washington, D.C., reviewing whether or not Donald Trump and other people are federally responsible for supervising, being the ringleaders, if you will, providing direction, oversight, support, and even counsel to people who are actually the foot soldiers on the ground, like the Proud Boys, like the Oath Keepers, doing their work for them. We will see, and we will certainly talk on this broadcast, as will virtually every other media outlet, about any return of grand jury indictments against Donald Trump, against others likewise involved at top layers, if in fact grand juries return those charges down the road. Donald Trump has other problems out there, as we well know, and let's talk about two of those right now. We know as well that in addition to that particular offense conduct that is the focus of the Jack Smith pursuit, that Donald Trump is also on the receiving end and is right now actively involved, even though he's not present for the civil trial being brought by E. Jean Carroll against him for defamation and battery, coming out of this combination of federal law and state law that permits her in the federal court to civilly prosecute him for what she describes very compellingly in a very compelling and persuasive presentation of her own testimony before a jury in New York, in Manhattan, about his sexual assault on her way back in 1995 or 1996. We've talked about that in the past. This past week, the defense and the prosecution have both rested in that case. She again seeking damages against him, not only for that assault, but also for defamation, saying publicly while he was president and since that time that those events never happened. She describing the damages that she suffered to her reputation and asking the jury not only to find that these events happened, not only was she raped during the course of this encounter with Donald Trump at the Bergdorf Goodman department store way back in the mid-1990s, but she has suffered from that and suffered a damage to her reputation. That's the defamation charge that she has brought. And that is the charge that is now almost before the jury. Late this past week, the judge, a fellow named Lewis Kaplan, looked at defense counsel, with whom he has had a tumultuous relationship during the course of this trial, and said, counsel, is your client, Mr. Trump, not there during the course of these proceedings, civil proceedings, not there during the course of them. Is he planning to testify, the judge asks. And the counsel, it says, his name is Joseph Tacopino, says, judge, my intention is not to call my client. He will not be here. And the judge, probably in an abundance of caution, says, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to give you until Sunday night, tomorrow night, to tell me whether or not Donald Trump will be appearing in court on Monday morning in this defamation assault lawsuit. I'll give you until then. And until that time, we'll let you continue to ponder this. Your client, who again is overseas during much of the recent trial here, he can come back and he can testify if you'd like to, but tell me about that by Sunday night. And if in fact he doesn't do that, we will go into closing arguments on Monday morning. That's what Judge Kaplan says to all of the attorneys, including the attorney for Donald Trump. Now, Donald Trump said, almost contemporaneous with this, that he's got to head back to Washington, to New York, because he's got to appear in this case, even as his own attorney is saying that that will probably not happen. Again, highly unlikely. The tea leaves are reading well. Highly unlikely that he will, in fact, appear and testify during the course of this proceeding, but one never knows. The judge, probably for appellate purposes, ensuring that everyone knows that he is treating Donald Trump well. Trump has repeatedly talked about and complained about his bad treatment in all of these lawsuits. Here's a case where the judge, bending over backwards to afford him the opportunity to come forward and testify in his own defense against all of the very compelling evidence presented by E. Jean Carroll and her counsel during the course of this two-week trial. We'll find out about that on Monday morning, and then we'll also almost certainly go into closing arguments. What are those closing arguments going to focus on? Focus on a number of things. The defense did not, aside from cross-examining E. Jean Carroll and her witnesses, did not present its own independent case. Doesn't have to do so. Has no burden in this matter. E. Jean Carroll has the exclusive burden by a preponderance. Again, this is not a criminal trial. Does not have to show beyond a reasonable doubt, even though the event conduct is certainly criminal in nature. This is a civil proceeding. So she's got to show by a preponderance the assault and the defamation that followed. How did she do that? Well, again, this very compelling testimony of her own about what happened to her, the rape itself, the effects of that, the fact that afterwards she did in fact go to some friends and describe what had happened to her. And those friends also testified about the accounts way back in 1995, 1996, E. Jean Carroll engaging them in these discussions about what just had happened to it. Why is that relevant? That corroborates her testimony, right? It says it's contemporaneous with this thing that happened to her. She was talking to people about it. Even though she didn't go to law enforcement, she is talking to other people about it. We also had two other women, not related to this particular horrific offense conduct, who came forward and said, you know, Donald Trump engaged in the same kind of conduct with me. Lots of women out there maintain that he did engage in sexual assault behaviors with them. Two of them actually testified in this trial in support of E. Jean Carroll's proposition that she, too, was among his many victims out there. Much other evidence includes the defendants looking at a photo during the course of a deposition that was played during the course of the trial just this past week, misidentifying the plaintiff, E. Jean Carroll, as one of his wives specifically Marla, in a photograph. And why is that significant? Well, because one of the propositions that Donald Trump has advanced during the course of this trial is that, again, in scurrilous, horrific language, he says, look at her. She's not my type. I would never be attracted to her. Well, in fact, he identified E. Jean Carroll, misidentified her as his wife, presumably somebody he was, in fact, attracted to. And so, again, that tends to undermine that defense of his. Also, we heard, of course, an examination of the former president about this infamous tape, the Access Hollywood tape, in which he talked about the ways in which he routinely engaged with people in Hollywood, women in particular. And he was quizzed by counsel for E. Jean Carroll about that, and he affirmed it. He said, yes, indeed, that's how I behave. He talked himself as being a star, said, yes, indeed, they will let you do that. Horrific, terrible language. But nonetheless, he doubles down on that. And why is that important? Why did the judge let that in? Because once again, it underscores this notion that Donald Trump has this mindset, this behavior, his view toward women generally, and that is how he's behaved in the past. That is apparently how he has behaved in this case as well. All those kinds of things being argued on Monday and beyond to a jury, now going to have before it this determination about whether or not they return a verdict in favor of E. Jean Carroll or in favor of Donald Trump. That's going to be their assignment as the judge gives this to them next Monday, next time, next Saturday, almost certainly getting a verdict result from them, and we'll talk about that on our next program. Stay with us right after this break as we talk about other stories related to American justice.
Feeling down?
anxious, depressed? You are not alone. According to
the Devil's Advocates Radio Show,
he's the grave digger, Gilbert Brown.
Where can you go where it's always a standing room only? You ain't gonna find that in Chicago.
It's never personal, only politics.
You ain't gonna find that in Minnesota, standing room only, because you can go to the gumball machine, stick a quarter in there, I'll come ticket.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
That's the way it is, man. We love football fans. Fans love us.
Weekdays 4 to 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast. Scattered thunderstorms likely tonight, otherwise overcast skies. Lows around 51, east winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Chance for isolated thunderstorms again tomorrow, 66. Cloudy, overcast tomorrow night. Chance for scattered storms. Lows dip down to about 49. Chance for scattered storms Monday with highs in the upper 50s. Chance for scattered showers and highs in the low 60s on Tuesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 56.
Fem, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
And we're back. We are talking here on Morning Cannolis about the delivery of justice in America, in particular, right before the break, talking about this civil lawsuit heading toward a jury verdict in Manhattan, a federal district court determining whether or not the claims brought by E. Jean Carroll against the, at that time, future president, now former president Donald Trump, defamation, assault, should in fact result in a verdict against him. Lots and lots of things for the jury there to look at, to assess, and ultimately return a verdict based upon the evidence in that case. We were talking also in the first portion of this first hour of Morning Cannolis about the other issues related to January 6th, other issues that Donald Trump plainly has to face among his many, many pieces of litigation, both civil and criminal, out there. Some significant things coming out of Georgia this past week as well. We know that for a long period of time, Fannie Willis, who is the district attorney in Fulton County there, she spent about 2 years or so investigating whether the former president there and his allies illegally meddled in the 2020 election there in Georgia. Again, much related to what happened allegedly in Washington, D.C. at the time of the January 6th counting of those votes. In the course of that election, of course, those electoral votes being cast in Washington, D.C., reflecting what happened in Georgia. And again, they were properly done at the time of the counting on January 6th. But the focus of the state court, the state investigative pursuit there, undertaken by this special grand jury brought together by Fannie Willis, is whether or not Donald Trump and other people in Georgia specifically tried to influence and change the results in Georgia. You may recall well this now infamous phone call between the former president and the Secretary of State, in which the former president was asking for 11,780 votes, one more than was needed to capture all the electoral votes. It was in the wake of that that Fannie Willis decided to expand her investigation into all sorts of other things, not just focused upon Donald Trump's attempt to change the results of the Georgia election, changing the electoral count there, and therefore arguably, possibly changing the arithmetic when it comes to the counting of votes in Washington, D.C. She's looked at many, many other things involving attempts to influence poll workers. And in particular, she's looked at this involvement of the false electors. We've had them here in the state of Wisconsin as well. And we know that the Department of Justice, according to the Deputy Attorney General, is also looking at this false electors scheme that happened here in Wisconsin and in many other states, including Georgia. That is where people came forward and said, you know what, I'm a real elector. I'm going to sign off on a piece of paper that says I'm an elector. And in fact, Donald Trump won the electoral vote in this particular state, Georgia, Washington, Wisconsin, other states around the nation, certifying falsely that the Electoral College should be interpreted and understood to grant the votes from a particular state when, in fact, that is not the case. So Fani Willis in Georgia looking at that false electors scheme there. And what is the news that comes out of Georgia just this past week? We have got fairly clear information from some court filings just yesterday, and then also from some other people who were confirming around the edges, again, without specific identification, that about half of those Georgia electors identified during the course of this investigation, possibly exposed to criminal prosecution, certainly investigated by Fani Willis, convened in December of 2020, again, to try to keep former President Donald Trump in power, have apparently taken some immunity deals in this investigation into election interference there. Now, what is that all about? Well, that means that various members of this group, the false electors there, plainly the targets potentially of criminal investigations, the indictments there perhaps coming down the road. We know that previously a special grand jury that Fani Willis convened had found that a number of people should, in fact, had made the recommendation that a number of people should be indicted. A suggestion even from the foreperson that among those may be the former president, not especially clear. But we know that these false electors, probably among the people being the focus of the special grand jury and perhaps now the indicting grand jury as well under Georgia law. Those folks, obviously, in communication with the prosecutor, Fani Willis, on all of this. And the significance is, as some of them are getting, again, according to the reporting coming out of Georgia, looking at their criminal culpability and saying that it would be a good thing for me as an elector facing the kinds of penalties that I have plainly in front of me, facing criminal prosecution, let me see if I can make an arrangement with the government, properly done under the state rules, federal rules as well, when that happens, to engage in a negotiation and potentially an arrangement whereby I get immunity. I get immunity from prosecution. And that would mean that if these reports are clear and that they are true, that Fani Willis would not charge them with certain offenses, or maybe not charge them with certain kinds of offenses. We don't know about the extent to which the immunity deals are complete, whether they're giving complete passes on their criminal exposure or partial. We don't know much about that. But plainly, she is doing that to do what? To gain their testimony. And that underscores, again, the importance of this news story. It means that she is looking very, very closely, dramatically, intimately at this false electors scheme in Georgia, just like the federal authorities, Jack Smith and others, are doing the same in Washington, D.C., and trying to determine whether or not this scheme involving people coming forward and falsely representing that they are electors when indeed they're not, if that, in fact, also could support prosecution under state law. The fact that this report comes out about immunities being given, very significant. We know, for example, that there's a fellow named David Schaefer. He's the head of the Georgia Republican Party. He was among those who could face criminal charges. We don't know if he's among the electors, the fake electors, who's the within this group of folks getting immunity here. Another person named Kathy Latham, also a fake elector, who was a Republican leader in the rural office of Coffee County, Georgia. And a third person, Sean Still, a Georgia state senator, also filed and later withdrew a lawsuit related to the vote in Coffee County. Them also a part of this group, arguably within the scope of attention by Fani Willis among the fake electors. They may or may not be among those who are now taking immunity deals in exchange for their testimony. Again, what does all that mean? It means that Fani Willis is seriously exploring and pursuing this fake elector aspect of things and asking for their testimony so that they can testify about other people. Specifically, questions like, who asked you to do this? Who prepared these documents? What was your motivation? What was their motivation? Tell me about the conversations that were had. Very significant things. We'll find out about more of that as these cases are indicted. But a big change in the landscape of that prosecution just this past week in Georgia, having to do with the state prosecution, the potential state prosecution coming out of an indicting grand jury, the office of the DA, Fani Willis, in Fulton County. Stay with us as we talk about yet another January 6th event in the news of just this past week.
High pay with excellent benefits? Check. Fair treatment and safe work conditions? Check. A paid training program?
Had enough of those little flies in your kitchen?
I did. That's why I got Zevo. I just plug in the trap, insert a cartridge, and let the light do all the work.
Zevo traps use blue and UV light to attract and trap flying insects with no odor, no mess, and no stress. Stop swatting and ditch the DIY traps. With Zevo, getting rid of bugs is as easy as
click, click, blue.
Zevo, people friendly, bug deadly.
Local radio for your community. Civic Media, broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin. Continue the conversation online. Find and follow Civic Media on Facebook and on Twitter.
ABC News.